Welcome to Frustrated and Exhausted, the podcast for women in leadership, where I help you fulfill your ambitions without sacrificing your sanity or your resilience. Today, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Justine Recomini to Frustrated and Exhausted. Justine is currently head of tax at ICAS, which is the Institute for Chartered Accountants. She's a non-exec director of the Chartered Institute of Payroll Professionals, and she's had a number of roles over the years as non-exec director in charities. She's an expert in HR and employment tax specifically, and after working in some of the world's largest accounting firms, she also ran her own successful consultancy for a number of years. Now at ICAS, she works to influence and improve government tax policy, and she's worked on a few projects for the Treasury and is regularly called to give evidence for both the UK and devolved parliaments. This conversation really hones in on how knowing yourself can anchor you in your career, can bring confidence and resilience and help you as a woman get through some of the challenges, some of those frustrations and things that exhaust you and keep you moving forward. I hope you'll enjoy it. Hello, Justine. I'm really happy you've been able to join me today on Frustrated and Exhausted. Now, we've obviously had a bit of a chat before kind of we came onto this, and I know something about Justine that some people listening, or most people listening, probably won't know. So, kind of opener for you, how on earth do you go from starting off your first job in interior design in Marbella, working on millionaires' yachts, how do you go from that to a career in tax?
Hello. yes, it's a strange one, isn't it? I grew up in Spain. I went to school in Spain, and I started working in Spain just after I left school. And I loved my job. It was really good fun. As I think I said to you, it's good when you can spend other people's money for them. So there's nothing quite like it. I came back to the UK because I wanted to pursue, well, really a kind of a career, a profession, more than just having a job. So I also wanted to go to university and everything else. So I came back to the UK. I came back actually when I was about 19. I was nearly 20. So I came back and I wanted to move to London. So I went to London. I was on my own because my mum and dad were in Spain. So I moved back to the UK. It was a weird experience because I hadn't lived in the UK as an adult. So I didn't even recognize the cuts of meat in the shops. I didn't know where to go to pay my electricity bill or my gas bill or anything. So I had to learn everything from scratch as if I was a foreigner. And then I applied for some roles in languages, which, you know, because I could speak Spanish and German, I could speak Italian now as well, but I could speak those languages and I wanted to get into something to do with translating and interpreting. But unfortunately, because I didn't have a degree in that area, I was sort of excluded from that. So I decided to go and try and join the forces instead. That was my second choice.
Very adventurous of you.
I know. My mother was always going on about me joining the Wrens. She was a bit obsessed with the Wrens. She wanted me to join the Women's Royal Navy. But actually, I didn't want to join the Navy. I thought I'd join the Air Force. So I did all the exams, the tests, the this, the that, the other for the RAF. Got through to the final stage, and then they told me that I was ineligible to join the RAF because I'd lived out of the UK in my most formative years, which could potentially mean that I was capable of being bribed or something, which I thought was a bit crazy. So anyway, having gone through all those hoops only to sort of fall at the final hurdle, I decided the civil service was my next best option.
And I had designs on doing something super glam, like joining the diplomatic service or being a spy or something like that.
It's honestly not as glam as they make it. I can assure you.
So I kind of applied. I went to the Civil Service Commission. I did a direct entrance exam and all that kind of stuff, and passed that, and then got drafted to the most glamorous department of all departments, which was the Inland Revenue at the time. So that was a bit of a come down for me. So I joined HMRC, possibly the only less glamorous department at that time was what was the DHSS, which is now DWP, of course. Yeah. So I joined that. They train you to do everything that you need to know and everything else. So I did all that. I spent 10 years at HMRC before I left. So that is how I got into tax. And I worked in London. I was employed to inspect the employment taxes records of small employers around London. So I used to specialise in things like barristers' chambers. I used to spend a lot of time on Harley Street, visiting jewellers and doctors. I used to go up to Covent Garden. I used to go all over the place doing all these different types of inspections. It was great fun.
Making lots of friends along the way, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
You've kind of made that shift. You've had those kind of early knockbacks, which can be hard at that age as well to sort of bounce back from, because you know sometimes it's a bit like, well, what now?
Yeah,
you've kind of obviously moved on significantly. You've had a long career now kind of in tax and moving into different areas and different organizations. What do you think's been the most challenging aspect of that for you?
I think the most challenging aspect is sort of as a woman, first and foremost, I suppose it's being taken seriously. I've got a good sense of humour and everything else. You do want people to acknowledge that you've got a brain in your head as well. Yeah. And when you're young and blonde and I suppose you dress nicely and everything else, people that at the time, which was probably in the mid to late 80s, being a woman in business was quite difficult. It was you know, difficult to be young and taken seriously. So that was my first battle. You know, your resilience shines through, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So how do you actually maintain that resilience, though? Kind of, if you've kind of got years of that going on, how do you stay sort of strong in the face of that? Because I'll tell you why I'm kind of so interested. Well, obviously I'm interested anyway, but I literally a couple of days ago had a message on Instagram from somebody early-ish in their career experiencing now something not dissimilar to sort of what you experienced then. So I know that this is live, and I know that you're for people, and I know that it still happens, and that actually there's things that you've experienced and learned from that you'll be able to share.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first and foremost, I think it helps if you have been brought up by your parents or by whoever it is that's caring for you when you're growing up, to be self-serving, if you like, resilient, self-confident, without being arrogant, if you see what I mean, because there's a big difference between being self-confident and being arrogant. And I'm not an arrogant person at all. But I think knowing who you are and not being swayed from that, never forgetting who you are. I've got a big thing about knowing what you want out of life and pursuing it without anybody trying to knock your self-confidence. It's a difficult balance to maintain sometimes, but actually you've got to decide what you believe in. What do you want, and what do you actually believe in? And do you believe you can do it? And if you believe in yourself and you believe you can do it, that's half the battle. and you've just got to convince other people of that then.
Well, that's the thing, I guess. When you were in those situations though, and you're kind of, people are saying things, or, you know, there's the little remarks or the actions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not always the remarks, is it? Sometimes it's the actions and the way people kind of behave around you.
Yeah.
What are you saying to yourself in the moment to kind of remind yourself of that? That actually, inside, that's where you come from.
I'm quite a sort of stable and steady person, and I lead a stable and steady life. Some might call it boring. I don't. Mm. I don't think there's anything less boring. I don't want to be a celebrity. Yeah. You know, I don't. We've got this terrible problem nowadays where everybody wants to be famous and they want to be a celebrity, and unfortunately, that brings its own problems to the table.
Mm.
But actually, what I'd like to do is just be quietly confident that I know what I'm doing, I know how to do it, and I just carry on quietly doing my thing. And, you know, never forget where you've come from and who you are.
Mm.
And that people care about you and love you. And hopefully people who are listening to this have got somebody in their life. It doesn't have to be a relative. It could be a friend. It could be the next door neighbor. It could be anything. Somebody that actually cares about you and believes in you. And that really helps. You know, if you don't have somebody that cares about you or believes in you, then you can sometimes feel a little bit lost. But you can find someone who believes in you and cares about you, and that really helps.
Mm.
You know, whether it's a partner or a friend or a relative or something. Because not everybody's got the relationship with their parents that I had with mine.
No.
They were very, very supportive.
When you're moving between these different places and organizations, and, you know, maybe it's tricky kind of being the woman in that scenario, being the younger woman in that scenario. How do you adapt? Because, like, we can kind of be ourselves, but sometimes we kind of have to adapt to the environment a bit in order to survive it, to be, you know, honest. Oh, yeah. How did you approach that? How did you go about that? Because I know you've had quite a few moves sort of over the years in different places.
You've just reminded me of a scenario where when I was still at HMRC and I'd moved from inspecting local businesses in London to inspecting businesses nationally. So I was inspecting large groups of companies. And for the most part, they were run by men. And I used to go along as the team leader to inspect a large group of companies at their head office. And then we might go to regional offices and everything else. And I had a team of people with me who were doing the inspection with me. You couldn't possibly carry something like that out on your own. So, you know, if you're inspecting a bank or a huge retail business or something like that, it's got, you know, head offices, regional offices, etc., all over the UK. So we'd turn up, and a lot of the time, the people who we were talking to, which would be, say, finance directors or whatever, people in those capacities who needed to explain things to us, were deferring to my colleagues, my male colleagues, rather than speaking to me directly. They wouldn't look me in the eye. They would just be speaking to my colleagues. And I'd have to remind them that I was in charge of this inspection and it was me they were supposed to be addressing.
Mm.
And, you know, that's, you have to be assertive. You can, as I said, there's a difference between assertiveness and arrogance. There's a difference between confidence and arrogance. There's nothing arrogant about standing your ground. And that's what you have to do. You know, if you know who you are, and you feel happy with who you are, you can stand your ground. And that's what you've got to do in, you know, in a lot of these situations. It's not easy.
No.
People don't half feel better for having done it.
People won't be able to see this, but I'm sitting here nodding furiously along to this. Having experienced not different situations, but not dissimilar scenarios and kind of responses to that. And yeah, there comes a time, doesn't there, when you just got to sort of draw the line in the sand and say, no, actually, this is me, I'm in charge here, and
that's right,
you need to see that and respect it.
And it's happened a lot, you know, over the course of my career. A lot of people have chosen to deal with, they want to speak to my husband. You know, it might be a tradesman that comes to the house. They want to deal with your husband or talk to your husband about the electricity or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and it comes as some surprise to them that actually it's me that knows about the electricity and not my husband. My husband is the son of a restaurateur. I am the daughter of an engineer. So I know about electricity and I know about plumbing and things like that. You know, I can take a car apart and put it back together again. So whereas my husband can't wire a plug.
Yeah.
So actually, and I'm not talking behind his back. He freely admits that. You know, he knows I do all the DIY. So actually, you have to sort of say to the person, excuse me, you know, it's me that you're talking to. So please carry on. You know,
I think this is the thing, isn't it? You kind of, it's easy, I think, for people. We fall back on stereotypes and these assumptions. And sometimes people just aren't even aware that they're doing it. It's such an ingrained natural thing, isn't it? And then, but actually they're completely wrong and they've misjudged. You know, you've talked a bit about your parents and kind of the role that they've played sort of in self-confidence and that sort of thing. Who do you think your biggest role model has been?
From a family point of view, my mother and my father probably have equal pole position on that, because my father was a very logical thinker. He was a problem solver. And I think I am a logical thinker and a problem solver. I don't believe that there is a problem in this world that can't be resolved if you just take the time out to think about it. Mm. People go, oh, that's impossible. We can't do that. I've had somebody say to me before, when I was working at the Office of Tax Simplification, somebody said to me, oh, that's a ridiculous thing to say. You can't rebuild London. So I just looked at them, you know, that was an analogy that they were giving me. And yeah. I just looked at them and said, well, somebody rebuilt it after the Great Fire. So why wouldn't you be able to rebuild London? Everything can be overcome in this life. You just have to sit and think it through. Mm-hmm. Don't do knee-jerk reactions. Just sit and think about it. But I think in terms of business, you know, a role model for me would definitely be a lady called Janet Adam, who I worked for at BDO. She was one of the very few female partners in Manchester at the time that I joined that firm. And she was a very no-nonsense person. She wasn't horrible and she wasn't intimidating. You could hear her coming down the corridor because she used to stamp her feet, probably in warning, actually. And she also used to click the top of her pen very fast. You knew it was Janet Adam walking down the corridor. But actually, she was no nonsense. She knew her onions. She knew what she was talking about. Clients respected her. Mm. And she said it like it was. Mm. And I liked that about her, because you always knew where you stood with Janet. Mm. And everybody always knows where they stand with me. You know, it's not always good news you're imparting, but you can say it in a nice way and maintain control of what you want to maintain control of, you know.
I think that's really true, because I think sometimes people really shy away from those difficult conversations and or giving the bad news, thinking, oh, they might think I'm not nice or not kind or whatever, but actually it is more than possible to say the things that need to be said without making somebody feel bad about themselves, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's the worst thing you can do. It completely disengages people. It's totally wrong to treat people like that. You should treat everybody with respect. My main motto in life is to be kind. Mm. It doesn't mean that you're weak. It's just because I'm a nice person doesn't mean to say you can walk all over me. But you can say things to people in a nice way and still get the job done. Mm. You should never make anybody feel bad. I've had somebody, when I worked in a firm in Leeds, I walked into a room and somebody screwed up a piece of paper that I'd written a report on and threw it at me, and it hit me on the head.
Oh my goodness.
Across the room. And they said, what sort of SH1T do you think this is? Yeah. And threw it at me, and it hit me in the face. So there's no point in crying in these situations. It doesn't do you any good. So I just said, this meeting hasn't begun yet, but it's already over. And I walked out. Because you have to keep your dignity in these situations. You can't let people treat you like that. And I wouldn't dream of speaking to anyone like that. Mm. You've got to be professional at all times, regardless of what you're thinking.
I think this is one of the things where, you know, people talk a lot about authenticity and authenticity at work and being yourself at work, but you still need to be professional about it. I think people see that as an excuse for bringing kind of poor behaviour in at times, and it really, you know, I think you're absolutely spot on there. It needs to be professional.
You know, nobody is better than anybody else, and nobody else is better than you. So as far as I'm concerned, there's got to be a level playing field all the time.
I get a real sense from kind of talking to you that there's just such a solid foundation, like this kind of, there's a real determination to deal with what comes up, to kind of keep moving forward, to progress, but without compromising yourself.
Yes.
Where do you think that comes from?
Well, my mum and dad were really into education, you know. My mum and dad had nothing. They were children during the war. So they believed in continual improvement, I think is the modern phrase for it. But it's actually a continuous program of broadening your horizons. And there's nothing wrong with stepping outside your comfort zone. In fact, it's a good thing. You know, if you learn a foreign language, you actually end up learning more about your own language as well at the same time. That's the unintended consequence, which is a benefit to you, is that you actually learn more words in English because you're learning them in a foreign language. So it's actually, it's not something to be scared of, stepping out of your comfort zone. And actually what you do is you broaden your horizons, you learn more, and you become a more balanced person as a result. Mm. So that was the sort of values that were instilled into me. And I think as an only child as well, you cannot stay in your comfort zone, because your comfort zone is hitting a ball against a wall in the back garden on your own. And you can't do that for the rest of your life. So you've got to move out of the back garden and go and meet some people. You know,
I mean, as a fellow only child, I think I learned how to deal with conflict quite early at school, because I didn't have a big brother or sister or anybody else to call in when things got difficult. You kind of had to sort it out yourself. So I know exactly what you're saying. You kind of, you do learn a little bit how to deal with those things early on.
Yeah, you do.
If you were starting again now, if you were just starting out your career, what would you do differently?
If I was to start again, I might be glad to start again now in today's environment, because there's a lot more equality than there was back then. I mean, I've been in tax for 37 years, so, you know, we're going back quite a long way now. But if I was to start again, I think I would probably assume more about the fact that people would treat me as an equal from the beginning, and feel free to question it when it doesn't happen. Because when I first started out in my career, if you weren't treated as an equal, you weren't really entitled to ask why not. And if somebody was, you know, being a bit creepy towards you or something like that, you had to laugh it off. You couldn't do what you really wanted to do, which was to slap them in the face.
Yeah.
But you could probably call that out now to a greater extent without actually it all turning against you.
Yeah.
You know? I think there's a lot more opportunity to feel as if you're entitled to some respect and some equal treatment.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I know there've been occasions when things have happened to me that I, in theory, could have reported, but it didn't occur to me to, because it just wasn't talked about.
Yeah,
in the same way that it is now, and I I do think you people really need to take, if that stuff's still going on, then people really need to take, you know, the opportunity to kind of,
Yeah, I mean, all
report
these
it,
different
get it dealt with.
campaigns. Yeah, like, I mean, the Me Too campaign was brilliant for that. You know, it really sort of brought it into people's streams of consciousness that, you know, it's not acceptable just to sit there and, you know, be treated badly, you know, in the workplace or in any other place. So, yeah, I think that's what I would do if I was starting again. I'd have that probably a bit more reassurance, and because it does come as a surprise to you when you're not treated equally. But back then, you were powerless to do anything about it. You know, if you've ever seen the film Working Girl, then, you know, that is, you know, I didn't have the hair and I didn't have the same clothes or makeup as they did because they were in New York and I wasn't. But that was my lived experience. That was what it was like going to work. And I don't think it's like that anymore for the most part.
No, for the most part. I guess there'll be exceptions in different sectors and things at times, but yeah. What advice would you give someone starting out now?
Don't think you're not going to have to work hard. You are. You don't get anywhere without working hard, unfortunately. And the only time that you don't is if you win the lottery or something. And as I say, something like that brings its own problems anyway. But actually, you don't get anywhere without working hard. If you don't have to work for it, it's probably not worth having. And also, be true to yourself. If you don't like what you're doing, you can change it. And you can go and do something different and find something that suits you and your rhythm and your style and the way you are as a person. You know, I can honestly say that my job doesn't feel like a job. It has done in the past. There's been many times when I've said, I hate this job. But actually, I don't hate my job now. I think you've got to find something that suits you so that you really are enjoying your life, because don't forget, you know, life's, as John Lennon famously said, life's what happens while you're making other plans. So you have to live every day as if it's your last.
I don't think there's really a better note to wind this conversation up on. Thank you so much, Justine. There's some absolute gems in there, and I know for people kind of coming through, there'll be a lot in there that's actually really encouraging and can really help people to kind of really take hold of themselves and have that confidence to know who they are and to hold on to that when it can get a bit tough at times. So thank you very much for sharing your wisdom, which you might not see as, but it is
such as it is,
and for taking the time to talk to us today. Thanks very
thank
much.
Thank you, Ruth.
Wow, what a note that was to end on. There are three things I think that I really take out of that conversation. And I think the biggest one is really knowing your values, knowing where you come from, know what's important to you and listen to them. You know, when you feel like things are not right, is that because you're being expected to act outside of your values, or other people are acting in ways that really kind of cut across yours? And that does happen to all of us at times, but I guess we need to worry when it's happening all the time and really understand what that's telling us and do something about it. So that sense of really being true to yourself, I think Justine said. The second thing was, we've all got options. And remember that. Don't feel that you have to be stuck in a place, you know, forever or for all time. If it's not right, you can change it. You can move. You can do something different. And to do something and to find the thing that plays to your strengths, that you feel good doing. And thirdly, if somebody isn't treating you as an equal or is being disrespectful, call them on it. It might be uncomfortable, but actually, if somebody is crossing your boundaries, there are different ways to do this, but if somebody is crossing your boundaries, find a way to let them know and let them know that that's not acceptable to you. And while it can be difficult at times and not easy to be sort of that assertive, it will, as Justine put it, feel good. It will feel good to do that and to really make things clear for other people about what's acceptable to you and what isn't in terms of their behaviour towards you. I found this an inspirational conversation to have, and I left the conversation feeling really quite grounded, actually. And I think that's really one of those things that we want to try and aim for, is in that knowing who you are, really feeling like you're grounded in that, so that when things are tough or when people aren't treating you the way that they should do, you can hold on to that sense of yourself and you knowing yourself and what's important to you to guide you through it and to handle it in the best way you know how. Join me again next week. Speak to you soon. Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of Frustrated and Exhausted. Hit the follow button for future episodes. You can also follow me on Instagram at Resonate Leadership and LinkedIn at Ruth Alexandra Wood. I'd absolutely love to hear from you. Frustrated and Exhausted is brought to you by Resonate Leadership and the wonderful team at the Podcast Boutique. I'm your host, Ruth Wood. Take care and speak to you soon.